from ABC News Radio, KMET 1490 in Southern California. This is Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with your host, Tyler Jorgensen.
All right, welcome out to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio. I'm really excited because over the past year or so, we've had a few of our former guests come back for updates. And today we get to talk with Bob Madonik, who is a prolific product creator. And we had him on the show back in 2012 to talk about his product called Square 36. Since then, he's launched dozens and dozens of new products across the world, really, I think 40 plus countries. He's written a book and he's done a ton of great things. We're going to catch up on his story since 2012. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Thanks for having me.
Man, it's there's not a lot of entrepreneurs. Every entrepreneur that we have on the show has a different journey. And every journey has a lot of similarities. But you have one of the, like I use the word prolific and I mean it, like you do a lot. And I think it's partially because you've kind of created a formula that you can follow for this. So we're going to unwrap what the black sheep formula is a little bit. But let's start with a little bit of an update on Square 36. So remind us what the product is.
Okay, so Square 36 started with an oversized yoga mat product that I developed because I was doing P90X and I kept hitting my elbows on the floor. So I released the oversized yoga mat product on the market in 2009, and I got feedback from customers that they were using it with shoes, so it kept ripping. So that led to the development of the cardio mat, which is basically a yoga mat with a rubber top coat on top. With the development of that new material and product, Square 36 sales like really took off, changed everything for me. So recently I just moved manufacturing from China to Germany to try and improve the quality even more. And that's kind of where we're at in a nutshell.
Yeah. So a simple concept, it seems, right? Like, hey, this yoga mat's not fitting. It's not big enough for me to even do these workouts. So you built Square 36, right? It's 6 feet by 6 feet. It's a larger mat.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I do is just take like existing products and just change them a little bit, like make them bigger, make them smaller, make them thicker, or make them whatever, you know, it's just like small adjustments. And the benefit of that is like you can go into a factory and they're already making a product and they can just change or tool their machine a little bit and make a totally unique product. And then you have, you know, maybe a couple years of really profitable sales before everyone jumps in and copies.
Yeah, that's when I teach ideation, one of the first things I say is look for things that suck, right? So there might be a product that is,
exactly.
Hey, it's close,
yeah, exactly.
But it's not quite right. And that's really what you've done here. You said, okay, yoga mats exist, but there isn't one that fits what I'm using it for. And so, man, that's 2009 to 2019. There's been quite a journey. What are some of the biggest challenges that you had with Square 36 and how'd you overcome them?
In the early stages, it was convincing the factories in China that I was legit, that I deserved exclusivity, because I always try to negotiate an exclusivity agreement. So at first, I didn't have sales really to justify that. So that was a difficult task to finesse the exclusivity. But once I got over that hurdle, you know, then it was smooth sailing for a long time until, you know, every time you change suppliers in China, especially your former supplier, there's like about a 99% chance they're going to copy you, right? So that was an issue for me. I was always trying to improve the quality and like find better materials. And every time I changed suppliers, I got copied again. So, you know, that's a big problem for me basically is copying, because once your product gets copied, then it becomes a commodity and then it's a race to the bottom. You know, your advertising cost goes up, your profit margin goes down, you know, your customer service goes up. It's just like, it's at that point, it's time to shuffle and jive and create something new. Right. So that happens in every product and every business. So it's just part of the life cycle.
And there's only so much you can do from intellectual property law and exclusivity negotiations, all these kind of, there's only so much you can do. So like, how important is branding and, you know, kind of being the category king of whatever product you're creating?
Well, I think it's super important. And I've been reading a lot of books about branding and about archetypes and about how to create a great brand. And actually, I don't know if you've read it or not, but Chip Wilson's book, Tight Black Stretchy Pants. That's the guy who created
Lululemon. I haven't read it yet.
Oh, it's amazing. It's like one of the best books ever about brand. And actually, that guy just lives a couple blocks away from me. His house is worth $75 million. It's the most expensive house in Canada.
Wow.
He's amazing. And the guy, he's worth $4.4 billion. His net worth fluctuates $40 million a day. So he's really the real deal. Yeah, like he's really, for me, the
And there's plenty of people selling, you know, yoga pants, but he's still able to dominate and be the category king.
Why? And this is something that's lacking in my own formula, is that, like, for me, I'm just trying to create problem-solving products and put them for sale everywhere. And it's kind of like a base hit, right? I'm not going for a home run. I'm kind of trying to be more conservative and just, like, you know, make a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there. And the sum of all of my portfolio is hopefully, you know, a decent amount of revenue. With Chip Wilson, he recognized yoga was coming, like it was a trend. And he paddled out and he caught that wave before anyone else. And he surfed that wave. And I think surfing a wave like that is really important to get from, like, to get that into the billions.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, most people who get into the billions surf some kind of wave. Like the Chinese, for example, like there's tons of rich Chinese in North America now. They've surfed the wave out of China where, you know, China's been, the government's been hooking them up with no interest loans and facilitating business. And that's why a lot of them have gotten super rich. You know, it's not because they've been doing like really ingenious problem solving. It's like the environment is right for them to get rich. So I think that's one.
And a lot of it isn't innovation, right? That's kind of what you're saying. They're not necessarily coming up with something revolutionary. They're saying, hey, this is something that's already a trend. How do I get in front of it? And how do I ride it? And how can I make a splash, right?
How do I copy this and sell it?
That's their move, right? But then you look at Lulu and they say, like, okay, we're going to take a brand. We're going to make it a premium product. We're actually going to raise the price points and we're going to create a massive brand prestige around it. So there's definitely two ends of that spectrum.
I'm trying to be more like Chip Wilson.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's more value there.
I'm a big believer.
But you know what happened with Chip Wilson? When Chip Wilson got ousted as CEO or whatever, as like the president. And then the whole mandate of the company changed, right? It became about, like, the product wasn't yoga gear anymore. It became shareholders or shares. That's what Lululemon sold because it was public, right? So then they took the brand integrity that Chip Wilson created. They raised the price and lowered the quality, and they leveraged the brand integrity to give shareholders higher dividends. And what it really did is, like, started to lower the brand's value, in my opinion. You know, and I think we're going to see the same thing happen in Tesla now that Elon Musk's out. I think, like, once a public company loses its, like, its visionary leader, the mandate changes and it becomes all about shares. And they lever the brand equity that CEO created for profit.
Yeah. And sometimes the pendulum can swing back and come back into a healthy place, or, you know, from a brand value perspective, it can come back, and sometimes it doesn't. So you've had a lot of swings and adjustments as you've been scaling and running Square 36. And like you said, you made some manufacturing changes recently. I mean, the entire landscape of e-commerce is massively different in 2019 than it was in 2009. What are some of the biggest changes?
Well, Amazon's changed completely. You know, like, it's a crowded space now, and, like, the advertising's more expensive, and there's hackers involved now. And, like, whereas before it was just like the Klondike gold rush, now it's a full-time job. You know, you got to be constantly, you know, creating content, putting it out on different platforms to let people know. There's just a ton of noise on the internet now, right? It's not the place it used to be. But at the same time, more people are buying online now than they used to. So, you know, you can argue.
Well, the noise has increased on both sides, right? So the noise has increased, meaning consumers are there more frequently.
Exactly.
But it's also more advertising, more competition.
Exactly.
So it's just, noise is the right word for it, I think. No, I was just going to say, I think in many ways that means there's also more opportunity to stand out. Because if there's a lot of noise, sometimes it doesn't take that much to look like the one that's doing it right. Because there's a bunch of people doing it wrong.
Well, that's why it's important to make something totally unique, right? Yeah. Like, if you're just going to copy something and create a commodity, you're going to get lost in the noise. But if you create something, like, truly valuable and unique that's problem solving, you have a window where you're the only game in town and there's a lot of profit before everyone jumps in and copies you. And that's basically what the Black Sheep Formula is about, finding that problem solving product and making that profit. And then once it dies, because the life cycle is shorter now than it used to be, right? Because ever since 2017, when the Chinese got on to North American e-commerce, like, the whole climate change, because they operate differently. People in North America, we play by the book. We think reviews are real. We think that, like, you know, everything on the internet's honest, right? Where if people from China, like, that's what they did with Trump. The Russians went on Facebook and threw a bunch of propaganda onto Facebook, and people thought it was real. And that's how Trump basically got elected. And the same thing is happening on Amazon, where the Chinese are filling with fake reviews and fake sales ranking and, like, all this kind of stuff. And North American consumers think it's real. You know, and that's how they're exploiting the internet right now. And I think that there needs to be, like, the collective unconscious of North America needs to wake up and realize, hey, we're getting hacked.
Yeah.
You know, not everything on the internet is
real. Well, that's interesting. Like, the way, like, you're presenting that we're getting hacked isn't like they're infiltrating our computer systems, right? They're actually infiltrating our minds through like the way that we're being presented information. And so I think this kind of comes back to just the importance of general consumer awareness, right? Which as a marketer, like Absolutely. It's kind of our job too, right? As a marketer selling a product, it's our job to get someone to understand the need of why they need our product and kind of hack them towards our direction, right? And but the goal is to be an ethical marketer and to be selling quality products and products that benefit and improve people's lives.
I'm trying to create quality products and back them up with lab reports and make it as good as possible, you know, and go that way instead of trying to trick people into like, you know, saying that this product from China is like non-toxic and blah, 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 but I don't actually have a lab report to back it up,
right?
You know? I'm trying to go like as good as possible. But you know, there's just so much competition, and my competition who copied me, or they claim that their product's non-toxic too, but they don't have lab reports.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know how they can claim that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So what made you, you know, want to go from creating all of your own products, developing all the, you know, running your own companies, what made you want to come up with Black Sheep Formula in the book and start sharing that with the world?
I was already helping people like all the time, basically. You know, so like I had people who I didn't even know contacting me, asking about different products that maybe they read about me on Tim Ferriss or whatever. And so I was already helping people all the time. And I just decided like, hey, I should put this into a book and just make it a thing, make it another product. So, and I'm really passionate about it, right? Like, cause I started with $2,200, like basically back in 2005. So I'm really like I started with nothing. So I really like the formula is really important to me, and it's really almost like a religion to me. It's been like something that has changed my life personally from being like totally broke to living pretty good, you know?
Sure.
So I'm happy to share it with other people. And I'm not sure if everybody is capable of doing it, because I don't know if everyone's born an entrepreneur. I used to think that, but like, I don't know if everyone has the ability to work from home, like, you know, on their own agenda or whatever, but like, at least for the people who do, here's the formula from point A to point Z on everything you need to do to turn $5,000 into $1 million, right? Like, and I, as far as I know, there's no Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek is like the closest thing to my book that's out there. But the Black Sheep Formula is a lot more specific on exactly what kind of product, exactly how you do it, exactly where you get it done, exactly how you market it, like everything. It's literally a formula. It's not theoretical. It's not trying to say like, oh, if you have your own business, you're gonna have a great life. Like, that's not. It's not a motivational book like that. It's a how-to book on exactly how you do it. So if someone hates their job, and if someone's like stuck in a corporate hell, this book saved them from that.
So where the 4-Hour Workweek is really good is helping people have a belief that it's possible, right? Like, it's a very introductory level to dropshipping and to e-commerce and to starting a business.
Exactly.
But your book, Black Sheep Formula, takes it from kind of the introduction to self-employment 101, right? To really to an advanced, like from that step all the way through an advanced course. What would you say, like, you know, if someone stumbles across your book, give them, you know, kind of the intro, the cover of what it is.
It's a non-conformist guide to creating products and selling online.
All right. Well, that's a good tagline. I dig it. And so it's about for someone that isn't already in the space, right? It's about creating a physical product, a product of your own, and selling it to consumers via the internet, right? Like, that sounds simple. You and I have done that, but we know that although there's a formula, it's very easy to get off. Like, and I've found that sometimes we start to think that it's simple because we've done it a few times, and then we'll skip a piece of the formula or a step of the recipe. And holy cow, like, it changes everything.
I still get my kicked on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Seriously, like, you know, it's still, business is hardcore. And it doesn't matter how good you are, like, you know, you're still failing on a regular basis. And it's still like, you know, it's like 10 fails for one success. Still, that's just business. I think that's
For sure. And I think that the having a formula that tells you what to do when you fail is the biggest thing, right? Like, hey, this product's not working. Do I improve or do I bail? And I think knowing when to stop working on a product launch is the most important thing for me, because it's okay that not every product is going to win. And that's okay. The sooner that you accept that, like, it's not about each product, it's about getting through the process and finding the product that works. That's your first one or your next one is more important than making the current thing happen.
Right. Well, sometimes I throw the dart at the dartboard and I'll miss, but the market will tell me like, oh, do it like this, or change, or people complain about how the product performs. And what they're really telling me is change the product like this. So then I do it, and then the product does really well. So, you know, that's why it's good to throw something out there, see, and get feedback from the market. The market's not going to lie to you. They'll tell you exactly what they want, you know, through one-star reviews or for returns or whatever. They're very honest about what works and what doesn't. And that process is super valuable. Yeah. I love that. You know, like I don't enjoy getting one-star reviews, but I recognize the value of them. And I listen to them and I try to adapt. You know, and also when customers give me one-star reviews, I reach out to them and say, thank you. Like, I'm gonna take your feedback and I'm going to implement it. And people really like that. You know, they appreciate that.
Yeah. And I think that's the complete concept of failing up, right? Like, it's okay to stumble. It's okay to fail as long as you're using that to create forward momentum. And instead of saying, oh, it didn't work, I'm going to go hide under my sheets and cry myself to sleep, right? Like, it's like, no, okay, like that's feedback. And that feedback allows you to get closer to the goal that you're actually trying to achieve. Whether that means that product isn't going to work, or how can you change that product, or what's the next thing, what's the lesson you need to learn to do the next launch better?
Exactly, yeah.
Give us a nugget from the book that's kind of, or from your experience, that what's something that you think is often overlooked, or something that you think is some of the big, like a big piece of advice that you could give?
Well, the mantra that I always go by is, a calm sea never made a great sailor, right? So that's my thing. So like whenever I come on hard times, which happens on a regular basis still, you know, I recognize that like I'm training, I'm sparring against someone who's better than me, and it's making me a stronger fighter, you know? And I think that attitude is really important if you're going to be an entrepreneur, because you're never going to make it past 6 months if you don't enjoy failing to a certain degree, or don't recognize the value of failure to a certain degree. And I got a whole chapter in my book called Fear of Failure, and how basically the fear of failure is like the key to all of my success. I might tell a bunch of people I'm going to do this, right? And now if I don't do that, I look like a total chump. That fear of failure really drives me to succeed all the time.
Yeah, you've got to call your shot so that you're going to swing, right? If you don't call your shot, yeah.
I got to own it.
And sometimes it's going to fall short, but that doesn't mean you didn't go for it. And that's huge. I think overcoming the fear of failure is super important, because basically to me what that means is embracing the fact that you are going to fail. But as long as those failures are, again, like we talked about, forward moving, then it's okay. It's part of the process.
Yeah, it's a very important part of the process. And if you don't experience that, you're not legit, in my opinion. You got lucky.
Totally agree.
You got lucky. You hit, you know, something came to you and you got lucky on your first crack, or you got money through charity somehow. But the real entrepreneurial process is getting your ass whooped 90% of the time, and then having a 10% like success rate that hopefully overshadows everything else that you ever did, right? Like, that's my experience. If I get my ass whooped on a regular basis, and it's humbling, and every once in a while, I'll hit a triple or a double, or maybe a home run, you know, like that's just how it goes, you know? So, and I think once you accept that, then it's a lot easier. The process becomes easier and more enjoyable and more productive.
Yeah. I think it's really important for entrepreneurs to become appreciative, if not even fall in love with the process of failing forward, right? The process of that feedback loop, that saying, hey, I got a one-star review. How are we going to make the product better? Hey, this product didn't work. How's the next one going to be better? You know, what can I learn from it? Because what you just mentioned is really, I think, fascinating. It's that you said you still get beat up every now and again, right? And most people that are just getting started would say, well, Bob's way ahead. Look at him. Like, he's successful. He's got products in 44 countries. He's doing, you know, tons of revenue, and the profits are there. But that doesn't mean that the problems stop. And it doesn't mean that they're not just as painful when they hit you, right? So you've got to just embrace that process.
Well, I mean, you can systemize all you want, but eventually, like, your online platforms, it's kind of like your yard, right? You don't have to mow your lawn every day, but you have to mow it every week, you know? And you have to, you know, trim your bushes and rototill and fertilize. You have to tend to your yard. And it's the same with your Amazon listings or your website or whatever. You can automate it to a certain degree, but you still got to pay attention to it, or it's going to get overgrown. It's going to, like, rats are going to move in. Like, it gets messed up. So, you know, that I think that's an important thing about, for me, when I started making a decent amount of revenue, I set and forget to a certain extent. Sure. And I found that, like, things started to fail because I wasn't in it. I wasn't grinding. I wasn't, like, part of it, and I wasn't getting right in there.
Yeah.
You know, and every time I kind of let go and I don't grind and I don't get right in there and live it and breathe it and be my company, then my company starts to fail.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and it's and Tim Ferriss is like, yeah, you know, 4-hour work week, and like, yeah, I guess theoretically that's true. But if you really want to succeed, you got to be passionate, you got to be involved, you got to grind, and you got to care. You know, yeah. And that I think like, you know, you can make like 10, 20, 30 grand a month like by not giving a f-. But if you really care, then you're gonna do really well. You know, I think that's an important part.
Someone called Tim Ferriss out on the concept of the 4-hour work week at one point. He's like, look, it's not literally about the number of hours. He's like, honestly, that's just the title that won the split test, right?
Right. And it's brilliant marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the reality is, like, if you want to succeed at anything, it's very competitive out there, and you got to be the one. Like, I don't know if you've read the Rule of 10X by Grant Cardone. Uh-huh. Have you read that?
Yes.
That's one of the best books ever. And basically it says, competition's going to make one phone call, you have to make 10. You know, if your competition's going to make one sales call, you have to make 10. If your competition's going to put in 1 hour, you have to put in 10. That's how you get ahead, is by 10Xing everything that your competition does.
Yeah.
And for me, that's truth, like with a capital T.
Yeah, it's the concept of you don't get 10X output without 10X input, right? Like, and you may, right? Because just through proper leverage or better strategy, but not sustained over time consistently.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I like how you said that. Like, if you haven't failed, that just means you got lucky. It doesn't mean you know the formula. It just means you know. And so, and I think it's really important that when people are trying to figure this out or trying to learn the process, that they're learning from people who have had multiple wins and multiple losses, because I think that's where you can get the balanced education and the balanced feedback of what this journey is actually going to be like. So, because I'm a huge believer, similar to what you were saying, that I think everybody can be an entrepreneur. However, I don't think it's the best path for everybody. And I think that the next, you know, and there's plenty of people that, hey, your best bet is going to be being an entrepreneur or being an employee. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to be an entrepreneur, then learn all that you can, surround yourself with people that have been there before you, like shortcut your success by learning from people who have already been on the journey for a while. And I think that was your goal in the book, right? In writing the Black Sheep Formula, saying, hey, here's the journey, here's the experiences, here's what I've learned. Like, let this be your guide to shortcutting your path.
Yeah, I got hit in the face a bunch of times, so you don't have to, basically. Yeah, you know?
Absolutely.
You can only get hit in the face 3 times, not 30, because I got hit in the face 30 times. So here, you're welcome. It's a shortcut, basically, because it cuts when people are trying to find their way. It's like, here's the map. You know, follow the math.
Well, I love that you didn't say, I got hit in the face 30 times, so you don't have to get hit in the face. You're still going to get beat up. It's just you're going to get beat up less.
Absolutely. And, you know, actually, my next door neighbor is the guy that started and owns 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Right.
He makes $1 million a day. And I've talked to him about business. He's a service guy. And if you read my book, I diss services because services are hard to leverage. And it's, the irony is not beyond me that the quintessential, like, contradiction to my entire book lives next door to me.
Right.
Anyways, I talked to him about it, and he's been through the valley of death a bunch of times too. That's just part of the experience. Yep. And every time I talk to an entrepreneur and they haven't been through the valley of the death, I feel like they haven't matured yet.
Yeah.
Or they're still like in an infancy somehow. You're not a legit entrepreneur until you've been through the valley of death.
Yeah, I've heard it.
And by the valley of death, I mean everything goes wrong and everything falls apart and you make it happen. You sail through the storm, your mast breaks, you get a hole in the hull, you got a man overboard, you know, like if you can get through that, then you're the real deal. You know, then you're really an entrepreneur, because that's how it is. It's a show. It's a mess. It's nothing goes as planned. Nothing's easy. Everything's a struggle. You know, you got to basically force everything to happen. And after that effort, eventually you start to see like, wow, it took shape. But it's because I left everything on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard an investor say once that he doesn't work with any entrepreneur that hasn't already been through that cycle at least 3 times, because they're still arrogant or prideful or think that they're impermeable or to failure. And so it takes that kind of that balanced optimism and humility.
Have you seen the show Naked and Afraid?
I haven't. I mean, I know of the show.
Oh man, it's like one of the best shows on TV. And basically what it is, it's like two strangers go somewhere, like some deserted island in the Philippines. And for 21 days, they have to coexist naked with nothing. And it's a survival show. And it's such a metaphor for my personal experience. You know, I really feel like I'm naked and afraid. And at the beginning of each episode, they kind of interview the contestants as they're kind of arriving where they're going to be. Mm-hmm. And everyone who's arrogant during that opening sequence never finishes the challenge. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And guys who have a certain humility, they're like, yeah, you know, I got some experience. I'm hoping it's going to go okay. Those guys finish because they've been through it before.
Yeah.
You know, they are not arrogant. And I feel like there's a certain amount of humility that needs to come with a more mature entrepreneur, is that they've been smacked down a whole bunch of times and they recognize that it's harsh out there. And I feel like that humility is, it kind of makes you more careful, and you kind of fight with your arms in a little bit more, you know, you're more conservative about your moves. And I feel like it's that more of a better long-term strategy. And every entrepreneur who I talk to who's been through the valley of death kind of has this little bit of humility to them, you know, and I've certainly have become more humble over the last, you know, 10 years for sure, because to be arrogant and say like, oh, I got this new product, going to make like $1 million a month on it or something, like that's not reality.
Sure.
That's not the entrepreneur's reality.
Right. Now, as we wrap up the show here, like one, you've given some great value and I think really helped the entrepreneur understand the journey. I highly encourage you guys to go to blacksheepformula.com and get Bob's book. Bob, what is one major item on your personal bucket list? I know since we've talked, a lot's happened. I mean, you become a father, all kinds of stuff. Your life has majorly happened. But what's one major item on your bucket list that you're going to achieve in the next 12 months?
In 12 months, I got a $1 billion goal by 45.
Awesome.
And I'm 39. So I don't know how realistic that is, but you know what? You got to swing for the fences sometimes.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Awesome. All right. I love it, man. I love it. I think you can swing. I think you've got the experience and the formula. Everyone out there in Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio Land, appreciate you listening, whether you're listening on radio or podcast or catching us on YouTube or Facebook, wherever you're listening or tuning in. Greatly appreciate you. And just remember, it's your turn to go out and do something.
Thank you for listening to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with Tyler Jorgensen. Please make sure to subscribe so you're first to hear new interviews and episodes. If you found this podcast to be valuable, please share it with a friend. Don't forget to visit our online dojo at bizninja.com to claim your reward for listening to the show.